You slept bad?
I slept terribly.
Hey, do you use... well, let's start and I'll ask you.
Second all? No.
No, no, no. Wait, that's bad? It's Tuesday. It's On Taking Pictures. That's what you're listening to. You've tuned in to the On Taking Pictures program. Wouldn't it be? I miss that. I miss the sort of random, you know, just dialing across and finding something.
I wish there was an easy way for us to broadcast live. So while we were recording, people could listen.
There's Mixlr.
Okay, we have to look into that. Just because I feel like if we're on the spot and people are listening live, not that we edit the show really. But, you know, it adds another layer to it, you know?
I agree. No, there's here. Just I'll send you this. You can look at it at your leisure.
Okay. I will look at Mixlr.
Mixlr. And yeah, then people could tweet.
That's what I'm thinking.
You know? What would be really great is if Periscope or Meerkat or one of those just had an audio version. Like if you didn't have to use the camera, you can just do live audio. That would be fun too.
Yeah. All right, we're going to look into this. Maybe we'll start doing it.
Okay. So it's OTP number 155.
Wow. It's like it never ends.
It never ends, right? This is the Stairway to Heaven version of On Taking Pictures.
Speaking of Stairway to Heaven, did you see the version that Hart did?
Yes, at the Kennedy Center Honors.
What'd you think?
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
I think, is it Ann that's the singer or Nancy? I think Ann's the singer, Nancy's the guitar player.
Okay, could be.
Or is it the other way around? Sure. Ann's the guitar. Anyway, regardless, wow, what a voice. She can belt it out.
Yeah, she can sing.
And the choir and, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah,
and
they did a good job.
Jason Bonham on drums.
Yep.
Fantastic.
In some ways, has to be Jason Bonham on drums, right? If you're going to do that.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, I really liked that version.
All right. Sorry for the rattle.
That's all right. No, it was good. So my name's Jeffrey Sidoris from Faded and Blurred. With me, let's see, who are you today? Yes, you're fancy, but
something else.
I don't know. I mean, we were talking about Little House on the Prairie.
We were.
I don't know. So the, I don't
you
know.
Telling me that Little House on the Prairie isn't, you know,
the
rock
bonnet,
and roll.
The bonnet-laden fancy photographer.
There you go. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Just for today.
Well, you know, Gilmore Girls, Little House on the Prairie. I'm just saying.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Apple sold every watch. You see that?
I saw that they have sold out whatever they have made. Yes. I'm not surprised. I mean, they have, you know, half a trillion people owning phones. At least they're going to sell a few million of these watches.
Yeah, but they sold them sight unseen.
Because there are crazy people out there who will buy this kind of stuff sight unseen. I will tell you, every review I saw, and I know that for specific people, for specific reasons, it's great. Like, I think Weathersby really excited to get one for, like, remote monitoring, you know.
Of the camera in the van?
No, that would be Bailward. Weathersby, you know, for like remote monitoring of servers so we could have him send him updates, you know, that kind of stuff. Like I could see that kind of thing, but almost every review I saw said, yeah, if you keep looking at your phone all the time, people think you're really rude, which is true.
Well,
you know, whether your phone or your watch, like it's just, I don't know. Personally, I want less of this stuff in my life, not more. So I'll wait until version 6 when it's $99 and I can just use it as a fitness tracker, you know?
Well, if that's the case, then why don't you just buy like a Fitbit?
But the problem is a lot of those things don't work really well, like on machines. Apparently the Apple Watch works on a rowing machine, which is kind of cool. Like there's a rowing machine mode. So it like knows the motion, which is kind of cool for me. I'm fine. I just write down the numbers in my calendar. That's how I keep track.
I just think that this is, it's a turning point for Apple in many ways.
Because they're a fashion brand now?
Well, it's really the first piece of tech that's not really revolving around the tech.
Yeah. I personally, I'm not all that excited about that. I think they're better when they are tech with good design rather than good design with some tech inside.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. The other thing is...
You and I are old school, though.
Well, I'm still on the, you spend $10,000 on the gold one.
No, well, and those then when it's stupid,
when it comes out, when the new one comes out
yeah.
in a year or two, then
yeah, those are people who just have unlimited amounts of money and they don't care.
Yeah. Like Jay-Z yeah. or Usher.
I don't understand why anyone would buy anything at the moment except for the sport. Spend $350 bucks. Spend $400. Don't spend $1,000 on something that's going to be useless in a year and a half.
Yeah, but the sport has an aluminum case, and you know maybe people have skin allergies or they don't like the aluminum, okay. so they want to go up to the stainless steel.
Okay, those people can get the stainless. I don't know. Personally, it's like you don't know how this is going to fit. Just buy the one that is cheap and then use it for a while, you know? No one's going to know any different.
Maybe they'll implement like Casper does with their mattresses. You know, you'll try it for
policy?
90 days. Yeah. Yeah.
I highly doubt it. Although, you know what? I did go try the other day. I was in Soho and I went to the Apple store and I tried the new trackpad. You know, the weird force touch
one? Oh, with the force touch? Yeah.
It's uncanny. It's creepy. It doesn't move, Jeffrey, but when you press down, you feel a click.
Hmm.
And then you press through that first click and it smushes into a second level, but nothing, the glass does not move at all. It's all how the little motors shake the thing to make your finger think that it's clicking.
Yeah.
It's creepy, but really sad. It really works really well.
It's going to be that force touch is supposed to be in the next iPad.
Yeah. Which I think, I don't know.
What do you think of that? No,
I've never been an iPad fan, so. Doesn't make a difference to me.
You shush.
I did read the Steve Jobs book. All right, enough of this Apple stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to go. We got follow-up from episode 22 or something, right?
Something like that. Oh, but wait.
Wait,
I wanted
to
ask
one last
you.
Thing. Yeah.
You mentioned that you didn't sleep very well, or you haven't been sleeping very well. Do you use any of these sleep apps that are out?
No. Like they have the ones that you have your phone on the mattress with you so it knows how you shake and stuff like that. The problem is I sleep next to somebody else who turns over and is up in the middle of the night more than I am. So that wouldn't do any good. And you know what? It's not like more metrics are going to tell me what's wrong. Today I just slept well. I think it's like muggy weather and it's turning into spring and it was like a little hot in the apartment, but not really. I think maybe I'm coming down with a cold or allergies or something. So it's just this weird combination where I just kept waking up in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big deal.
I use the one. Yeah, I use one called Sleep Cycle.
And what has it told you about your sleeping cycle?
That if I go to bed earlier,
yeah,
like if I go to bed at 10 o'clock versus midnight, I sleep better.
Okay.
And I pretty much consistently wake up between 2 and 3,
for
almost
good
every day,
or just for a little while.
Like for a little while, like to wake up to pee or something.
Okay,
right?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
get a drink of water or whatever.
Well, it's four hours. You're an older man.
That is true.
Yeah.
wow. But it's interesting. I tried another one. I tried Pillow that was recommended by Federico Vatici. You know Federico Vatici?
No.
MacStories.net?
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's a great site. He recommended. But what I found was... It didn't always register me getting up, and I know that I got up, but it would still count it as me still sleeping.
Well,
so
then
I went
that's
back,
a fail.
Yeah, I went back to Sleep Cycle, and that's the one that I like.
And the watch would do that, except you have to have the watch on the charger at night.
Right.
So, you know.
Oh, and I like that it measures your heart rate, too.
Okay, sure.
It uses the camera. Like, you put your finger over the camera and the flash.
Yeah.
And it... So my heart rate is consistently like 50.
Do you think that...
Is that good, 50?
Yeah, that's pretty good rest heart rate. Yeah, it means your heart's in pretty good shape.
Yeah,
good. Do you think that all of this sort of metrics of life stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, is... I understand that there are situations in which it's useful or that information will be useful for diagnostic purposes further down the line or long-term studies of whatever it is. But do you think that the amount of time people are, it seems to be trending that more people are spending more time trying to gather all this information on themselves. Do you think that time is well invested, or do you think that we were sort of going over the top? And the only time it's useful is if it can just be automatic in 5 years' time where we're not even thinking about it, but it's grabbing all that stuff anyway.
Well, I think we're in kind of a, and this is maybe the
transitory period.
Well, it may be the wrong term, but I think we're in kind of a golden age of being able to see this data fairly easily.
Okay.
That this is sort of the first gen that we've been able to efficiently and fairly effectively get things like pulse rates and number of steps that you take in a day and all that kind of thing. So yeah, I think maybe the pendulum has swung a little too far just because we're like, oh my gosh, look what we can do now.
Yeah.
And we have to kind of figure out where it fits.
Well, there's the gamification of it all too. You know, I need to take 10,000 steps because Jeffrey took 10,000 steps or whatnot.
Well, and that's an incentivized way
that works for some people
to do it. Yep. Yeah. My fear is or not really fear, but one of my concerns is that it ends up in the hands of insurance companies who say, well,
you've been sitting on your ass too much.
Right,
and so we're going to raise
your
rates.
Ice cream every week for the last 20 years.
Right, right.
So, of course you've got adult onset diabetes or whatever it is, but I think the ability to sort of itemize this type of detail and have access to it is pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm amazed at what we can do. I'm amazed at what my phone can do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the changes that are happening generation to generation now, and I mean, it's the same with cameras and everything else are it's becoming less and less really obvious stuff and more stuff that you'll notice is missing if you took it away 3 years from now,
Sure.
It's not like the latest one has, oh my God, this list of new features, but it's the kind of stuff 5 years from now you go, this thing doesn't even have that, it doesn't have many. Mm-hmm. Like I remember my mother last week called me up in a hissy because TurboTax wouldn't run on Snow Leopard or whatever she was running on her Mac.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I guess you got to update to, you have 4 gigs of RAM, decent machine, just upgrade to Yosemite. It'll work. It might be a little slow, but it'll be fine. So she just ran the thing and it updated. And I'm just thinking the amount of things that they've added even between, in the last 4 years to macOS that you don't think about now.
Sure.
But it's the same way that you don't think about them when they're just added one by one, but then you look back at the sum of all of them and it adds up to more,
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting. All right. So, follow up. Okay. So 2000 years ago, when we started this show, we had a story about, is that incorrect? Was it 2002 years ago? We had a story about this.
Those of you who still have the wax cylinders.
Yeah. The 78s, please don't break them. They're valuable.
That's right.
We did this story about Arne Svensson. Is that Arne Svensson?
Mm-hmm. Fair. Okay.
Took pictures of people across in the building across the street from him in New York City. I think it was in Tribeca. And he put them for sale as art. He put them up on a wall and they were pictures of people through their windows. Now I think none of them are really recognizable as those people. It's them turned away or partially behind furniture or behind a screen or whatnot. But it is, in many ways could be considered their private life.
Sure. And many, many people are of that opinion.
That
I'm in my home. This is my space,
And it's,
I should be able to open my windows without, fear of some pervert, whatever. Not that this guy's a pervert.
Right. The funny thing is that I don't remember where I came down on this back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what your position was?
I don't remember exactly, but if I think about it right now, I think I am siding on the people who brought the suit that I should be able to have my private life, whether or not I've forgotten to close my blinds and block off any sort of, visibility to the outside world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the reason why we bring this up is that, it went all the way to a panel of appellate judges in New York, who sided with the photographer.
Yeah. Basically told everybody to suck it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think he was that crazy.
Hey, suck it.
But he did basically say that this, you know, this guy can do this because it's art. You know,
The judges said Svensson's protracted lurking in the shadows, according to this article, we'll put a link in the show notes, yep, of his darkened apartment was, quote, disturbing.
The judges say that it was disturbing, but yeah, it was still okay, Jeffrey.
But neither a violation of criminal stalking laws nor a violation of the family's civil rights, as state law is now written, because Svensson's photos were works of art.
Okay.
So you can do all this kind of stuff, but just write some art schooly pretense, you know,
and get somebody to stick it on a wall and it's okay.
And then it's okay. And I don't know. I mean, again,
if he had sold this as a magazine of pictures in people's windows, you know, in a brown paper bag sent over state lines, is that still art?
Like, see, that's the thing. Is if there were some sort of link baity salacious title, does that change the content?
Yeah, because it was just called The Neighbors, so therefore it's artsy.
I don't know. And again, it's probably not even fair of me to say, you know, make some art schooly pretense thing. Yeah. And apologies for that. That probably came off wrong. But it just seems like it's the Jurassic Park thing. You know, just because we can doesn't mean we should.
Yeah, yeah. This is really interesting to me because I brought it up the other day and Conrad and I were talking about it. And I said, you know, what do you think? And she says, well, I'd be pretty pissed if people were taking pictures of us through the window and making money on us. You know, mm-hmm, like they're making it. It's not just art. It also is commerce. You know, if he was doing this as art and putting up on a wall as part of an exhibition and it was just like, I'm just expressing myself. That's one thing. But the guy's walking away with a paycheck because of it, theoretically, if he sells these things.
Sure.
And it's sort of like, wait a minute. You're making money off the fact that you looked in our windows and took pictures of us getting out of the shower. And if I sue you to either try to get you to take them down or a piece of the profits, I lose because you made art.
Right.
Like I can see that side of it too, you know?
Well,
remember the Jewish guy walking down the street
across the street.
Right.
Yeah.
Who got the picture taken by the guy had the automated camera with the flash up in the, up on the what's it called, scaffolding, mm-hmm, and he was really mad about it. But then they came. You know what? You're in public, and I understand that you're in public on the street. You're in public on the subway.
But
you're in your own apartment.
Yeah. In their decision, the article continues. Yep. The appellate judges said that, quote, concerns over privacy and the loss thereof have plagued the public for over 100 years. End quote. That to me sounds very
dismissive.
Yeah, it's almost provincial, in tone. That is a statement. I think.
People were scared of telephones taking away the thing. But yeah, look, telephones are all right.
Yeah, it's Ahoy. A statement made by someone who really doesn't understand how pervasive and how invasive
technology
this can
has become.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question then becomes: then where are you in private? If you're not in private in your own home, where are you in private?
Right.
In your own home with no windows. That's where you're in private? Like, that's the limits?
I don't know. Quote, the invasion of privacy of one's home that took place here is not actionable because the defendant's use of the images in question constituted artwork, end quote, and were not used for advertising or in trade. But they are being used for commerce.
Yes. And that's...
Aren't they advertising him as a photographer?
Yeah. And certainly he's selling prints if they're in some gallery.
So if I show your face, I have to get a release to sell it. Is that correct?
If you show your face and you want to use it for commercial use, as in, i.e., I'm going to sell it to sell Viagra. You know, if I take a picture of you on the street and I want to sell it to the Viagra company to put it in an ad, I have to have a release. But if I just take a picture of you on the street and want to sell a print in a gallery, I think I can do that. But this is not on the street. That's the part that gets me, you know. Question is, okay, so he lived across the street from these people, right? What if at the end of 6 months of shooting this stuff, he put up a thing on their front door saying, hey, I've taken all these pictures. Here they are. Here are prints for each of you. I'd really like to put him in a show. and I'm looking for permission from you guys.
Well, I mean, wouldn't that have been
the classy way to
thing
go
to do?
Yeah. I wonder. Yeah. Or what if he said, you know what? I understand this was an invasion of privacy. If you give me permission, I'm willing to cut you in on some of the profits.
It just seems like at some point in this case, he's hiding behind the First Amendment.
Yeah. But at the same time,
I don't know.
I don't like the idea whenever people say, I'll be standing in front of a building sometimes in New York City taking pictures of somebody. And some, you know, rent-a-cop will come out and say, you can't take pictures here. Why? Well, this building's private property. I'm like, I'm on the street. Yeah, but the building's in the picture and the building is owned by so-and-so. You know, there's all this kind of stuff.
Sure.
So I also understand the side of the photographer who is saying sort of the law is getting it to the point where we can't take pictures in our own backyard.
Right.
Because the law, you know, because everyone's privacy is stopping me from.
Okay. I don't want to comment on the legality of it because obviously, according to this decision,
it
is
legal. Right.
And that's fine.
I'm just saying I can understand how photographers, artists could start feeling like their rights are being encroached by the supposed whatever privacy or power of other people, you know.
But again, and I think we talked about this when we first brought this up, these are the photographs that he's showing publicly. What was he privy to?
Yeah.
That maybe he hasn't shown or hasn't shown yet.
Yeah. Or
because I'm of the opinion that since I'm in my home, I'm in my private space.
Well, he did make the point of not using pictures where people were recognizable, right? That was part of it.
Sure.
And you know what? I can look outside my window sometimes at night and see some guy or some woman coming out of the shower, walking into the kitchen to click on a pot of tea or something like that. Mm-hmm. So what if I was a sketch artist and just sketched the person across the street? Cause I thought it was an interesting, the way they posed while they were turning on the gas or whatever, you know?
Right. Right.
So, I mean, you get into these sort of gray areas of, you know, I don't know.
But maybe now that this ruling has come down,
more people will take it further. You mean?
Yeah. Because the ruling has come down that, well, it's art. So do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I don't know. And
it's pretty fascinating.
I hope that this hasn't been, you know,
this guy's probably
legally
really
nebulous.
This guy's probably pretty psyched that he gets all this press because I'm sure this show wouldn't have nearly the, you know, notoriety that it does if he didn't have all this press.
And to his credit, what I've seen of
the pictures are beautiful.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, they're great.
I just wonder, you know, not necessarily legally, but ethically, where do you draw the line?
But that's also a subjective view that you and I think that his work is beautiful.
Sure.
Know? So if we didn't think the work was beautiful, that would change things.
Yeah. The shot of in the featured image, they've got
the woman bent
looks
over,
like a woman. Yeah. Bent over on the floor, maybe cleaning or picking up something. Maybe she looks at that and is just aghast with, oh my
God,
the size
I know of my butt.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not challenging the legal aspect of it at all.
Right.
I'm more concerned over, you know, the, I guess the ethical or the aesthetic aspect of it.
I mean,
I don't
look,
know.
These arguments, these battles have been going on for decades, right? You know, or centuries. And there is a question of, with the proliferation of digital photography and whatnot, so many more pictures are being made. So many more people are in the backgrounds of pictures that other people are taking and being used for all kinds of stuff or, you know, I wonder if there's also, do you think that there's a certain level of cultural ballsiness that this
Maybe.
Guy, would he never, would 30 years ago, would he be like, yeah, that's off limits. But now the line has softened enough that he can do this and think he can get away with it. That's a charged loaded term, but.
Well, one of the comments, I guess this means that if you leave your shades up or your blinds open, it's an invitation to be spied on and have your picture taken. It's the same mentality that says if you leave your door unlocked, it's an invitation to be robbed. One person says, no, the door analogy is completely wrong and an indication of your lack of critical thinking ability. The comment below it, the guy says, as long as you rob the house for the sake of art.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's funny, but it's bad.
All right, well, we'll have to see what everybody else thinks. I mean, not from the legal point of view. We know that, you know, this is what they've decided, so that's where they go. But it is weird. It does.
How do you end up feeling, listeners? How do you feel when you read this? Where do you come down on it? Not from the legal standpoint, but just
it's definitely on the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really. Ooh, that's tough. It shouldn't be as tough as it is, but it actually is a hard question.
That was a little. It was a little Billy Crystal from Saturday Night Live. Do you remember the sketches? Oh, I hate it when that happens.
I don't remember those sketches.
Oh, I'll have to put a link somewhere.
That's like 1980s.
Yeah,
Billy Crystal was early 80s, right? Hey, Jeffrey.
Uh huh.
You look marvelous.
I feel marvelous.
All right, we're going to talk about our sponsor before we go any further. Is that fair?
It's fair if you want to learn. Oh, I don't know anything.
Yeah. We're sponsored today by lynda.com. This episode is brought to you by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help
you. It's very radio-y. Come on, man. Okay. Come on, man.
All right.
The online platform. Do you have like your hand over your ear like Gary Owens?
Yeah. Next up. I could do it like, what's his name?
Hey, kid, you want to learn Photoshop? Come on over.
We should do it like Alec Baldwin. Can you do an Alec Baldwin? On Taking Pictures is brought to you by
Lynda.com. Yeah, no, I don't want to do that because I really dig Lynda. But I love Alec Baldwin as an interviewer.
Yeah.
But him reading the Capital One ads for
he reads them as an actor.
Yeah. New skills, improved skills now. Learn technology, creative, and business skills you can use today.
Yeah, you know, that's, every day.
Yeah.
All right. Yes, this show is brought to you by Lynda, and they've got over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology knowledge, or creative skills. You can get a free 10-day trial by visiting lynda.com/OTP. That's lynda.com/OTP. And they're really great. You know what? I'll wait till it gets to that part. Lynda.com is for problem solvers, for the curious, Jeffrey. For people who want to make things happen. Do you want to make things happen?
You know I do.
Well, then lynda.com is for you. Maybe you want to master Excel. Do you want to master Excel?
I don't want to master Excel. Okay. What I have been looking at are some of the color grading tutorials because color grading is such a nuanced kind of skill.
It's a bit of a dark art.
Yeah. And I've been kind of looking at the stuff with DaVinci.
Yep.
Cause that's what
you need a much bigger video card.
Yeah. No kidding. That's what Gary Yost uses and he's spoken very highly of it. So I was like, okay. And now they've got the 11 DaVinci Resolve 11 is out.
Yep.
So I've been looking at this thing and they make it sound easier than I understand it at the moment.
Yeah, well, then you need to watch it again, and that's the cool thing, right?
Yeah.
The thing I want to start watching more of are the Burt Monroy videos.
See,
that guy is ridiculous.
Burt, I don't think Burt's human.
He's inhuman. He's ridiculous.
Yeah,
but they're beautiful. I emailed once with him. You can learn to you can master Excel, learn negotiation tactics, build a website, boost your Photoshop skills, or learn how to be an alien like Burt Monroy. You can go to lynda.com and feed your curious mind. We've got some great courses in there. There's landscape photography, Olympic National Park, photographing the night landscape. There's that 25th anniversary microsite for Photoshop, lynda.com/25ps. Black and white project, creating a dynamic landscape with Lightroom and Photoshop with Chris Orwig, and advanced color workflows for photographers with Joe Brandy. And I would just like to say all those Burt Monroy ones, so you could be an alien too. But you know, we love all this kind of stuff. So go check out lynda.com, and with your membership, you can watch and learn from top experts who are passionate about teaching, stream thousands. Like
the guy that does the Da Vinci ones.
It's pretty great.
Patrick.
I will say the guy who did the Swift ones I was looking at was really great too. He was like a British or Australian guy, rather.
Inhofer. Inhofer. Okay. Patrick Inhofer. really good instructor.
It's great. And they have thousands of courses on demand. You can learn on your own schedule, learn at your own pace. The courses are structured so you can watch them from start to finish or consume them in bite-sized pieces, which I've done. I've looked through a certain course and said, yeah, I know that stuff, but I don't, you know, I could brush up on this stuff. And I grabbed three or four videos, stuck them on my phone, watched them on the train. And you can browse each course transcript to follow along, or you can search for an answer. You say, you know, at what point did they say curves adjustment layer, and jump right to that part of the show. And skip to that point in that video. So you can take notes to refer to them later if you're like Jeffrey and take notes about everything.
He does. He's right. I do.
You can download tutorials and watch them on the go, like I just mentioned, on your iOS or Android device. And of course, you can always create and save playlists of courses you want to watch to customize your learning path or share them with your friends, colleagues, or team members. It's really great. Your lynda.com membership will give you unlimited access to hundreds of topics, all for one flat rate. Whether you're looking to become an industry expert, you're passionate about your hobby, or you just want to learn something new, go visit lynda.com/OTP, sign up for your free 10-day trial, and we thank very much for their support of 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. Okay, so...
Hey, speaking of color grading...
Yep.
I watched a trailer...
Movie...
Yeah, it's a new Michael Douglas flick called Beyond the Reach, and this the director. I watched the little featurette too. There's like a 12-minute featurette on iTunes or Apple rather. The director Jean-Baptiste Leonetti is his name, and French director who Douglas says is fascinated with early films of the American West, like, you know, Peckinpah and John Ford.
Yeah.
And the way they have color graded this thing.
They've done the whole cyan and orange thing a little bit on it.
It's gorgeous the way they've done this.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous. And I've been looking a lot more at cinema for color than I have photography. Looking at not only like films of the 70s, but really sort of stylized films like War Kong Wai's 2046 or In the Mood for Love. And just there's a different way that DPs and cinematographers light and then how color gets translated. I'm just fascinated by the color of film.
I think interestingly enough too, I feel like you can go further in moving pictures than you can in stills when it comes to shifting color of things like skin tones. Because if you see people moving, you know, unless it's like obvious stuff where you're gelling lights and stuff, but if you see people moving, somehow you sort of you don't notice the colors. Like it sort of just blends in. It's like, okay, this is the way this thing looks, but here he is moving and talking or whatever it is. I don't notice that his skin is really orange in the scene because I'm following the story, and maybe my mind sees the orange as, you know, oh, intensity or, you know, saturation and all those things. But I don't think you look at it and go, wow, his skin's really green in this shot.
Right.
You know?
So the context drives the believability.
Yeah. In some ways that the color is sort of a, even though your mind is seeing it, your conscious mind isn't noticing artificial colors in movies as much as you would in a still.
Okay.
And I think part of it has to do with the fact that people like you and I who look at a lot of pictures all the time, if you just stick a picture in front of you, you have an instant thing of like, whoa, that's too saturated, or wow, that's really green. Like maybe it's supposed to look like that, but you know, like you notice that kind of stuff. Where it's very rare in a movie that I say, wow, this color is really off, even if it is really off, quote unquote, from an objective point of view.
Right.
Because I'm buying into whatever they're trying to do, you know?
Here, take a look at that photo.
I'm looking at screenshots on the internets.
Yeah. It just looks terrific. Maybe can you maybe put it in the show notes?
Yeah. Let me find a similar screenshot and I will.
Put a link to the trailer in it.
Yep. I could do that. Link to the trailer. Michael Douglas.
And I'm a fan of Michael Douglas. I dig Michael Douglas.
Who doesn't like Michael Douglas?
He, as he gets older, he looks so much more like his dad.
Yeah, it's funny. In the scenes where they're not in the desert, aren't as crazy.
In terms of toning and
yeah,
color.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It's when the light gets really harder out in the desert towards the middle to the end of this thing is where they really start doing the whole. It's a little bit of that sort of Transformers thing that everyone, the whole orange and cyan thing that everyone loves.
I've never seen a Transformers movie.
Well, that's sort of like the action movie thing is the orange and cyan thing, which I will add. There's a really good color grading thing that I will add a link to. Yeah, we could talk about that. What else you got?
Well, you put this Bjork thing in MoMA versus Faye. Didn't we talk about Bjork already?
You and I talked about it offline. I don't think we ever talked about it on the show. And so here's what's going on. There was a show at MoMA of Bjork, sort of a Bjork retrospective. And they've been working on it for years. It got all kinds of press, but people have traditional art critics have railed on the show, saying that it's essentially awful is a lot of the words that people used. I mean, they say that it's gaudy. And
are you
terrible.
Sure we didn't talk about this on the show? I feel like we did. Maybe it was after
you
the
and
show.
I talked about it right after the show one day.
Okay.
Because we keep putting it off.
All right. Well, if I'm remembering that wrong, then I apologize, listeners.
Okay. And people like New York Magazine's Jerry Saltz called it a discombobulated mess. The guy from The Guardian called it a fiasco. And not to waffle, a disaster.
Wow.
Ludicrously infantilizing and tedious audio narration, which accompanies the viewer's pavilion tour, that treacly sentiments about the progress in the life of, quote, a girl. Ensure that you are experience this journey as thoroughly as possible. Innocuous voice, unctuous voice urges from the start. What follows confirms the general rule that whenever anything artistic is described as the journey, you're pretty certain of going nowhere, you know, stuff like that. It's pretty terrible. Right.
Did you go see this thing?
I have not seen the actual show. I've walked by it and there was like a little line and I don't wait for stuff, but I'm a member at MoMA, so I can go.
You don't wait. What are you? You don't, who are you? You
well, don't I, I'm not going to, I was, you know what? I don't mind Bjork, but I've never been a huge Bjork fan. Like there was that one record in 95, 98, the one with also Quiet and the Something of Me there's that one techno-y kind of record that I really like, and some of the early Sugar Cube stuff I'm all right with. But I never thought of Bjork as like the genius of the art world that a lot of people think, you know, it's just not my style. But the question, I bring this up not to discuss Bjork, but to discuss the question of whether or not the world of art at large, right? The argument is that they are trying to basically pander towards the everyman, to the Facebook crowd, in order to get people into the show, you know, so that they're making art about things that maybe are not worthy of being in the places that they are. Same can't be said of MoMA, it says in this article, with pandering shows of Tim Burton, Abramovich, Kendrick, Tilda Swinton asleep in a box in the rain room, get ready for Yoko Ono upcoming, has seemed bent on, quote, reorganizing itself as something of a hipster lifestyle brand and its disdain for its core audience. Now, the question I have is, does art have a core audience? Should it? And, you know, is notoriety or... the fact that Bjork is a very popular person that's going to bring in lots of tickets enough for them to put on a show about her.
Okay. First of all, is Bjork very popular, or is Bjork only very popular among a small sort of subset or subculture?
Right. Okay. So this isn't a show about Taylor Swift. Right. This is a show about Bjork. Right. Go ahead.
Is the art market or is the art audience changing? I think you have to say yes. Anything else it is.
Right. So are these reviewers all old fuddy-duddies or who are living in the past of what the art world was and no longer is, or are they, you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. And down the bottom of the article, are we critics being elitist here and how? We want MoMA to behave itself as the combined Fort Knox and the Vatican of modern art that it has been, and around the edges it remains with such recent offerings as a splendid show of Matisse cutouts and a gamely argumentative survey of new painting. Well, But see, that sentence right there, that they view themselves as the Fort Knox and the Vatican of modern art.
Yeah. Which I think is not an unfair thing. The question is art by bringing in stuff that's been done recently that is outside the purview of a Rauschenberg on the wall with a bird hanging off of it, are they cheapening what was there, or are they trying to live in the now?
Well, I think to a certain extent, art museums and establishment have always tried to live in the now.
Yeah.
You know, when Pollock first did his first show for Peggy Guggenheim,
yep.
It wasn't exactly well received.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and you could say the same for any number of artists that when their first or earlier shows were mounted, that they weren't very well received. I think a lot of it for me, and this is my
vantage point
as an outsider, is that the art world takes itself way too seriously.
I tend to agree with you, but I worry. And
I think we've lost the spiritual side of art. The sublime expression of humanity side of art in favor of, will it sell? Is it important? Is it, blah, 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 blah.
But there is a question of curation, right? Like, should there be people whose jobs and, taste are valued in such a way that they can look at something and say, this is important for these reasons, whether or not it's popular. And that thing, even though it is popular, does not measure up as something important that will be lasting, right?
Well, I everybody has a voice, but I don't understand. And it's weird. It's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, I don't understand some of the critic mentality from the standpoint of you're criticizing something that you've never participated in materially.
Right.
And it's part of why I wanted to start painting again or taking pictures again or writing more is I want to have some skin in the game of the process before I feel like I have the ability or the right, I guess, maybe to comment about it.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Again, everybody's got to walk their own path. For me, I feel like I need to have skin in the photographic game to comment on photography. I feel like I have to, at least my paintings aren't great, but I'm trying to express myself in this medium that I want to comment on or in some ways, you know, curate. Maybe curate's a bad word, but not the right word, maybe not bad. But I feel like I should have some skin in the game in order that I can say this is what moves me or this is what inspires me, that I'll have at least some vague understanding of the process that went into creating it.
Yeah.
And that's just for me.
Sure. Right. But it becomes very difficult where the line is between, you know what? Whatever people like is what is art right now versus having some people who say, no, there needs to be some level of people for whom, the Vatican thing is a good one, right? Where we take, we create the Louvre of what is art now as we create it as an institutional barrier from things just falling to the wayside when they become unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
maybe the changing market of art is driving the changing curation of art.
Yeah. I mean, let's say it wasn't Bjork, but instead it was, you know, I don't know, John Bon Jovi, something or other, you know, and I love John Bon Jovi, but John Bon Jovi's not going to be at MoMA. Right. You know, it's Bon Jovi lyric sheets, handwritten on the wall in frames at MoMA. Like, is there a point at which it just becomes, okay, obviously you are just pandering to the audience. and that is somehow morally wrong, or is that never morally wrong and they should do whatever they have to do to get, you know, butts in the seats?
I don't feel like I'm qualified to make a judgment on that.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I have the pedigree or the information necessary to make that judgment.
Would I go see it?
I mean, okay, in that respect, how is that different than handwritten lyrics by McCartney and Lennon?
Sure. Would that be something? Leonard Cohen.
Or Johnny Mercer, or, yeah, you know,
because you know, Leonard Cohen lyrics are considered higher art than Bon Jovi lyrics by who? Those people in charge. Not that Leonard Cohen ever sold the amount of records Bon Jovi did.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's making that decision. You know, these reviewers, I think, are basically saying you people are making these decisions sold out. And
maybe this was an experiment. This was an experiment to see where do we move the chains?
Yeah.
You know, at what point do we get a first down? Maybe we didn't get one with Bjork, but maybe if we put up, I don't know, a Sid Mead retrospective, I would go see that.
You know,
I think that would be brilliant.
Yeah. The interesting thing about this is that there's also a certain amount of face, right? That a place like MoMA or LACMA or the Getty or whatever has a certain amount of built-in respect from the world around them because of the decisions they have made in the past. And that bad decisions, arguably like this, I'm not saying this is necessarily a bad decision, but bad decisions like this break away that shell that they had, that veneer, tarnish the reputation, as it were. In such a way that the institution loses respect and therefore is less valuable in society.
Maybe. Again, I don't feel like I'm qualified to speak on this very much. I mean, I know what I like.
I'm gonna go see the show and I'll return and give a little mini review. I just find it fascinating. It's like the art world eating itself, you know. Like it's some sort of civil war within the art world of the people who want to define art as what they defined it as 30, 40 years ago versus people today who say art is undefinable. Therefore anything goes, you know, therefore that we can put up a show of, you know, outfits Bjork wore and her lyrics and some videos or whatever. And that is just as valuable as the Matisse cutouts that were in the same space 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll be interesting going forward. If I mean, I guess there were probably always periods. If you look back and say, oh, there was a period between 85 and 92 where museums were doing terrible stuff that is completely forgotten nowadays, you know, and then there was the high period of the 78 to 82 that we all remember or whatever, you know, I'm just throwing out dates.
I mean, I will be honest in that I don't understand a lot of what MoMA or the art establishment thinks is important. I just don't.
Or why they think it's important.
Why they think it's important. I know what I like. I know what clicks with me. And sometimes I recognize the names, but far more often I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's the same with photography.
Yeah.
I know what I like and
that's the other argument, is like, if you keep putting up things of Matisse and don't put up some other artist who's unknown, then all we're left with is Pollock and Matisse and Picasso for the rest of time.
Right. And maybe it's not, you know, I had an interesting conversation with John Keatley yesterday, and I asked him, you know, what really gets you going in terms of photography? Who are you looking at? Who are you really enjoying? And it was really interesting. He said, it's a great conversation. I think it'll be up on Wednesday or Thursday. But he said that there wasn't really a photographer offhand that he could think of, but rather it's individual pieces from many different – he's inspired by individual photographs,
right,
not necessarily by an entire body of work.
Do you think that's more the future going forward? With the sort of the Pinstagram inspiration?
Maybe not individual photographs, but I do agree with him that projects. He's inspired by projects within a photographer's body of work, not necessarily their entire body of work. And that I can really understand and sort of get behind. I like a certain collection by artist X or photographer Y, but I don't like everything they've ever done.
Right. But I don't think that's reasonable to say you like, you know, I don't like everything, you know, Karsh ever did, you know,
mm-hmm.
but there are a lot that I like in there. I mean, no matter what we look at, we're always looking at a subset of somebody's work.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we look at almost everything that has ever been available, that's still a subset that they chose to show.
Sure.
You know? Yeah, I think it's true. Although I think that also looking at the world that way is also a little bit dangerous at times, in the sense that now you're comparing the best three pictures of everyone in the world combined against whatever it is you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, there's like,
sure.
I'm inspired by the best thing Avedon ever shot and the best thing that, you know, which is a difficult place to put you in, because there's no way you can compete with the best pictures that ever, you know, if you compare yourself to the best 50 pictures ever taken, well, that's a tough job, you know,
right.
trying to fight back to that, you know. It's interesting. Anyways, let us know what you think, guys. I find the societal discussion of art and what is good and the changing views of that between generations and the way that generations see art, I find all that fascinating in a way that I've, it's so big, it's like a soup that I have to cook down further.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, to figure out what actually is at the base. Or if it's just sort of a, you know, Secret of Life is enjoying the passage of time, and watch these people duke it out over Bjork, and 30 years from now, people saying, oh, this crap you're putting on now is terrible. Remember back in the 2015, we did that Bjork show that was genius. You know, who knows?
Well, and that's the thing, is it's at some point, it's all a barometer, right?
Yeah.
At some point, you're just kind of, I don't know. You're trying to see. I mean, that's part of their job, I think, at institutions like that, is to mount shows and exhibitions.
We're going on a photo expedition.
That's right. To mount these shows and kind of gauge where the taste of the art world lies. And sometimes you're going to hit it, and sometimes you're going to miss it. But you know, on the whole, bravo for them for taking a chance. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people might go there and just flip out and go, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen, and it inspires me to do XYZ.
Yeah.
Wow, what's so wrong with that?
It's funny. A lot of people are calling for the board to fire the curator who did it. Like,
wow.
They say it's that bad.
Wow.
Yeah. It's interesting. We'll put the links in the show notes if you haven't read this stuff.
You didn't lose the season. You lost a game. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's tough. Although these things cost millions of dollars to put on. They take months and months of work, you know. Years of work. It's tough. Hey, we have a question for you guys. I bumped into a piece of software that I wanted to see if anybody knows anything about, called Printao 8, P-R-I-N-T-A-O, number 8, which is a sort of a print software for Mac that is sort of like a little RIP kind of thing that does color management and deals with your printer drivers and all this kind of stuff. So I don't know anything about it, and I was going to download a demo just to give it a shot, but I had never heard of it. I used to use a piece of software on PC called QImage, which was also kind of interesting and good, that did similar kinds of stuff, but never saw this before. And I just figured I'd ask to see if anybody else had ever played with it. So if you have, write in and let us know.
Looks like it is very printer specific.
It is
specific to Epson printers.
And I think some Canons, but I mean, Epson is what, like 80% of the market or something like that, isn't it? Some ridiculous thing like that.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, some Canons. You're right. You're right. Yeah, my mistake. Yeah.
And even the Epsons, it's like if you've had the last few generations, you'll probably have something that works.
Yeah, it won't work for any of mine. I have the 3800, not the 3880. And I have the 7600, not the 7890 or 7900.
Use printers from the 1960s, Jeffrey. You know.
Hey, I find what works and I stick with it.
It's amazing though that technology really, it hit a place 8 years ago or so, and it's kind of been hanging out there for a while in my experience, you know, like it's gotten slightly better in many ways, but like not revelatory better, you know? Anyway, just something to look at. Hey, we're going to talk about a movie next week. You want to give a little rundown of this thing?
Yeah. Oh, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
I wanted to send you this. Somebody sent this to me, and I can't remember. I apologize. Who sent it to me? It's a new exhibit opening at the Getty today,
okay,
called Light, Paper, Process, Reinventing Photography.
Oh, yeah. Somebody sent this in. I noticed it, and I noticed you said you were obviously going to go see it.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go see it.
I wonder if it's going to travel.
I'm not sure, but it's on display at the Getty from April 14th to September 6th. For those of you who are in LA, it's at the Getty Center.
This is the big one up on the hill, right?
Yeah, right off the 405, not the Getty Villa. Although if you are in town,
go to both,
because the Getty Villa is a beautiful space. The Getty Center, designed by Richard Mayer, is one of my favorite buildings ever. It's such a stunning building.
Is it one building or is it multiple buildings?
It's multiple. It's a whole complex.
There you go. Okay.
But the one main complex is so you got the Welcome. You got 1, 2, 3. I think it's three or four buildings. The main museum, and then there are other buildings for like meeting rooms and lecture halls and research centers and
lecture auditoriums. Friend of mine works there. In fact, friend of mine works there and was recently at a conference with my sister last week. And this random girl that I know through my partner was tweeting pictures of my sister giving a speech, which was really
funny. How funny. Yeah. You're like, wait, I know her.
I was like, I know that girl.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's cool.
Yeah. So, just a little thing if you're in the LA area.
It's on from April 14th to September 6th.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe I'll get out to LA before September 6th. All right. So who sent in this video? Did you find this or did somebody send it in?
This Duffy thing?
Yeah.
I just happened upon this, and I don't remember what I was looking for, but I happened upon this documentary about a photographer from the 60s called Brian Duffy.
Right.
And the documentary is called Duffy, the Man Who Shot the 60s. And he was a contemporary of David Bailey, who I think we've used as Photographer of the Week.
Yep.
If not, we should.
If we didn't, I think we may have talked about him when we... Actually, I think we did because we used him that time we did the
Didn't Sakasagawa send him in?
Well, it may have been, but he was in that Rankin video. Remember where he was recreating one of his pictures? Yeah,
right,
go ahead.
Right. And Terrence Donovan and these three guys are credited with changing fashion photography to the more sort of documentary style that we kind of identify with. I mean, I would argue that Avedon did that a lot too, but
yeah.
I get what they're saying. So Duffy was at the top of his game, and I'm not going to give away too much, but the short version is he had enough and he burned all of his negatives
in the backyard in a bonfire.
Yeah. Yeah.
He must have been drunk or on drugs, right? You don't.
I'm not going to give it away. I don't know.
I watched about 2/3 of it, but I figured instead of talking about this week, somebody wrote in and suggested, I think it was Connors, who said, why don't you let us know what you're planning on talking about so we could watch it the week before.
Right.
So that's what we're doing. We're going to put a link in the show notes.
What is it? How long is this thing? It's an hour long.
Yeah. Can I just say though? Okay. So they, in the documentary, they talk about Duffy and Bailey and Donovan being like these three sort of Turks of, they were swinging 60s photographic culture in London, or the Cockney Boys or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it ever bother you when people talk about art history in any way in that context where it's like, these were the two painters that were mattered in the 1920s in Germany, and we're going to basically make it all about them, when, of course, I'm sure there were dozens of photographers who were taking pictures similar to this. You know what I'm saying?
Well, again, I don't have the historical knowledge to know whether or not there were dozens. Maybe there weren't. Maybe these three guys were the three guys that inspired the dozens, if there were dozens. I don't know.
The Black Trinity, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't have the the knowledge to comment on it. I just enjoyed his journey.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting, and it's they show a couple of scenes that I saw where they're talking to like models, film things, little film loops from models talking about doing shoots with him back in the day. And they're all like these young, beautiful women. They're just like, and by the end of the shoot, there were, you know, wine bottles all around. And
we were talking to Joanna Lumley.
We've listened to every record. And, you know, it's like, it's just so funny. It's just a different world, you know.
It's very interesting. And again, I don't know where I found this, but I'm so glad I did.
That's great. Well, we'll talk about it next week and maybe we'll use him as photographer of the week or something.
Wait a minute.
He's interesting.
This Vimeo link, I just noticed this. This Vimeo link, no, is put up by Chris Duffy, who I'm assuming is
the son who put this all together in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna reach out to him.
It's interesting that his son basically came to him and said, "Hey, I found a bunch of your pictures that you hadn't burned. Let's make hay out of this."
Well, and there was a health related reason that you'll find out about in the film. I don't want to give too much away, but please watch it. I think you guys will enjoy it.
All right, watch it and we'll discuss next week.
Duffy, the man who shot the 60s.
Yeah. We'll check that out. Anything else before we get to how did people do on the assignments last week?
You know, they were okay.
Wow, you're all middling about it.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, guys. I'm kidding. Ha. You know, I say this every week because every week it's true. You guys put up fantastic work, and this is such a great community of not only photographers, but there are some painters, there are artists, there are writers, there are all kinds of you guys. So last week was Bloom, and it's I love seeing, you know, spring and things coming up and people's takes on it. And some ways it's out in the field or sometimes it's in the home. You know, Gardner, that's a beautiful room that you got at, what is that, Ringwood Manor in New Jersey? Yeah. Who knew there was so much beauty in New Jersey?
Lance Long's picture of...
Kidding.
Lance Long's picture of like the fabric flowers are pretty cool too. James Partridge, that like super sort of camera-shaped one, in Australia is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It looks like a painting. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. And you know, I hate to pull out something from another one, but there, Adam Binslev shot of shoes, ballet shoes. That's a great, that pile of ballet shoes. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Mike Waller, Tulip Field with the tree line in the background. Gorgeous. Yeah. I love how the sky and the tree line is sort of muted, but then you've just got this field of red and purple and magenta, and it's gorgeous.
Did you see this shot of that Mario Mirabelle did of the fountain pen in the water?
Yeah, with the ink.
Yeah,
yeah, that's good super one. Cool.
Yep, very very cool.
Super cool. So, really good stuff, guys.
All right, so what do we got for next week?
Wait, what is this? What is okay? Next week.
Wait, hold on a second. You see the one of Fielding put up of her kid's foot in the shoe thing, that, you know, the shoe measurer thing?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember those from when you were a kid?
I do.
Like, that was I wonder if they even make those anymore, if everyone's just using the ones from 100 years ago.
I would imagine somebody's making them.
Isn't that weird? I forgot about those things.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so strange.
Aluminum little sliders.
Yeah, back when your feet used to change size.
Yeah.
And you had to look up what size they were.
Oh, I love the one that Jerome did too, by the way. No shoes were harmed when making this faceless portrait.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's cute.
Yeah, you really hit all of them, overachiever.
Yeah, bastard. Sorry, what were you going to say? I cut you off.
I don't remember.
I think you were saying something about next
week. Oh, about the assignment. You know, something around like markets or grocery stores or produce. What do you think?
So what is the, I think if you're going to do that, market should be the,
market.
Yeah.
I just whacked my mic stand. Sorry about Let's that. Okay. Market. What's interesting to you? And that could be a flower market. It could be an open air market. It could be a flea market. It could be your grocery store market.
Yeah. Well, as we call them in America, a supermarket.
Because everything in America market. Has to be bigger. I love grocery stores, and I think there are really terrific colors and textures and you know, packaging and you know, great opportunities for macro shots of like breads and cakes and pies.
And lots of people are going to think you're really weird when you're walking around the grocery store taking pictures. You know,
lots of people think I'm weird anyway. So
that's true.
So I'm okay with that. That's what I'm saying to you right here.
All right. Mark it. Got it. Written down in the show notes, ready to go.
Yeah.
Good?
Yeah. Good.
All right. So today's photographer of the week was sent in by Gary Yost, wasn't it?
Yes. And Gary, run on this one.
So pronounce this name for me.
I'm going to say it's Pentti Sammalahti.
Pentti Sammalahti.
That's how I am going to say.
And now he's Norwegian? Finland. Finnish.
Born in 1950 in Helsinki, Finland.
And he's Swedish born. So I wonder where his name comes from, because that does not sound Finnish to me.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out. Anyway, go ahead.
Stunning work. Yeah. I mean, I was poring over this stuff for a good hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just going, oh,
like
wow.
The white horse on like the black everything else.
Yeah, there
his
is
black and white work is, well, it's mostly black and white, right? Is it all black and white? I think it is.
Yeah.
Toned.
Some of it's toned. Yeah. But there is a beauty that he brings to this sort of otherwise bleakness of the landscape.
Barren, stark landscape. Yeah.
Oh, it's just gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. In Russia, you know, in Siberia, God, this sort of really distorted, almost fisheye wide angle shot of two guys on a motorbike with a sidecar in the White Sea. Gorgeous, gorgeous. It's just the distortion of it adds to the composition and just sets you sort of uneasily looking at. It's just beautiful.
Interesting use of sort of extra wide, sort of almost panoramic shots too. Mm-hmm, I wonder if they're cropped or if he was using some, you know, panoramic camera back in the day.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he was using. The shot of the dog on the snow motorcycle. This motorcycle has two skis, like outriggers, on either side of it. And it looks, I don't know if they're wild dogs or just somebody's dogs, but there's one sitting perfect profile on the seat and then a few others barking or baying at him or something.
I like that one of the dog, the two dogs where they're sort of shaped in a circle, where one of them has his tail up and his thing up, and then there's another dog behind him, but the way it looks, it ends up arcing all the way around.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
That's a great shot, too. So it's funny, though, what's interesting about him, and maybe I'm wrong in this, I'm just going to say it anyway, I don't know that they're all amazing pictures, but I don't know that if I saw one of them out of context, I'd immediately know it was his. You know, except for the ones that are very starkly black and white, like the ones where it's, you know, white. Like there's the one we were saying of the horse or the flamencos, you know, on the darker reeds or something like that. You see what I'm saying?
I think you mean flamingos.
Flamingos. Sorry, those guitar. Are dancers.
Yeah, or guitar type or something.
Flamingos.
Yeah.
I was looking at a picture while I was speaking. I should stop doing that.
Look at all those flamencos.
I like the monkey on the back of the goat. This is great stuff.
This is, yeah, look at okay, there are a couple links. Look at the Time Lightbox. First one is the gallery that reps him.
Yep.
But then the Time Lightbox series is, the title is Here, Far Away, The Visual Fables of, and again, hopefully, Pentti Sammalahti.
Yeah. Then the second picture is those flamencos.
Right, the flamencos dancing away.
You know, it's funny. Number seven in the Time one with the trees and the thing kind of feels like that.
Don't say it. Don't say it. I'm going to let me guess. Can I guess?
Sure, you can try.
Maxfield Parrish.
Oh, I wasn't going to say that, but that could be true too. I was going to say is it the Steichen picture of the moonlight one? Is that Steichen?
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'll have to look it up.
Number eight. I like that one too. Number nine. Ugh, that's great. What is that? Ino Washiko Lake.
Yeah. The Japan. Pond moonlight by Steichen. which is a very famous thing, was one of the was the most expensive print ever before Peter Licht started taking pictures and selling them for billions of dollars. Yeah, good stuff. This is excellent. And apparently his book is gorgeous. According to Mr. Yeah. Friend of the Show, Gary Yost, says that his book, Here Far Away, is like one of the most beautifully printed books he's ever seen. And they're available for $63 on Amazon.
I might have to order that.
Temporarily out of stock, so we'll have to make sure that you get one. But
with Amazon.
Yeah, if you click the link through our show notes, too, you end up sending Jeffrey a buck or two. Or me a buck or two.
Wait, what? When did I get a buck or two?
I can put a link on there.
Huh.
I don't think it'll make us any money, but you know, you never know. So you got anything else to say about this gentleman?
No, other than just superb, stunning, stellar.
Yeah, it's great, great stuff.
Beautiful, inspiring work. Kind of reminds me of, maybe not reminds me of, but I could see maybe where like Nick Brandt would be inspired by this guy. Look up Nick
Brandt.
Yeah,
no, I'm looking up. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Nick Brandt's stuff is way more polished.
Sure. But just compositionally, tonally,
sure.
I could see maybe that. I love Nick Brandt's work, by the way.
Nick Brandt's work feels very dreamlike.
Mm-hmm.
Or this guy's stuff feels very dreamlike, but in a very different way. It's like a different kind of dream. way to make a very stark landscape look much more human, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Got anything else to say?
I got plenty to say.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say about our photographer of the week?
No. Nope. I think that's it for me.
Samalati. That's impressive. Yeah. So how do people get a hold of us, Jeffrey?
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. That's one way. On the group, which is, we'll put a link in the show notes. It's bit.ly/OOTPG
yep.
Group, ROUP. We'll put a link. And then Bill tweets at Bill Wadman. I tweet at Jeffrey Sidoris. You can find us both on the Instagram.
All true.
Yeah. I think that's it.
And I'll put up the last couple shows I keep forgetting on takingpictures.com. So you can find the show notes at ontakingpictures.com.
Yep. Two new Craft and Vision podcasts coming out this week. Or maybe one this week, one next week. I'm not sure. The one this week, which I think is going up tomorrow or Thursday, is a conversation with John Keatley, one of my faves.
Can't go wrong.
Yep, good guy. And the other one, I'm not sure when it's going up because it's timed around the release of Lightroom 6. So I think it's the 21st. Has that been established as the official day?
Not that I've heard, but I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, it is a conversation with Piet van den Und, who is a Belgian photographer and one of the most popular of the Craft and Vision writers. He's got a really terrific set of black and white presets that he's created for Lightroom and a new ebook, kind of a getting up to speed book for Lightroom 6. And beyond that, we had a really great conversation about post-processing and style versus the substance in your photographs and how not to let one trump the other. I really enjoyed talking to him. He's a really nice guy. And he's, you know, he's crazy busy like Keatley is. All these guys are nuts. So look for that one. That was a good show, a good, conversation as well.
Okay. Excellent.
Or you can call as well.
Oh,
what's the number?
Good question.
I always forget.
347-86, I'm sorry. 347-687-9411.
Right.
And that's it. We will talk to you next week.
Yes. You got anything planned for the week? Anything good?
This week I have a couple things going on. Next week I have to take pictures of a concert pianist.
Nice.
It should be interesting. Nice. Without a piano, sans piano.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
She wants pictures without a piano. I had a great idea for a picture of like, imagine a beautiful concert pianist with long hair, laying down on the top of a large, like, concert grand piano and shooting it straight from above so that the profile of the shape of the piano is just like this stark shape against the ground underneath. And she's lying on the top of the piano in the shape.
That's what it I sounds like a shot from the Fabulous Baker Boys, which you can't go wrong with.
Yeah, I was thinking more like black and white and stark. Like, I'd put white underneath the piano, so it would just be like black piano on white, and she's inside the black area.
Sort that of, would be kind of neat.
Yeah, right? Little Arnold Newman.
Do you have a black piano? Or do you have access to one?
Yeah, I'd have to have access to a very big piano, and I'd also have to have access to some sort of rigging gear to get my camera way up above, which would be the tricky part. So I'm going to think about that. I'm going to see if we can make it happen.
That's a terrific shot, though. Sounds cool.
Yeah, it sounds like it could be cool.
Go the distance, man.
Well, that's not Come what on. She wants, but that's what I want to do. All right, we'll see you next week.
All right, have a good week.
Bye. Right.